from the CLC.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, August 19th, 2021. On tonight's show, my guests. Ange Loft, the Centaur Theater's first ever Indigenous artist in residence.
I was trying to explain what my next career thing would be, and I said, you know what, I want to be an archaeology artist. And I was like, what is that exactly? I'm just making up a job for myself, which more or less means that by the time I'm 50, I would love to be able to walk into an archive in any place within Ganyakahaga territory and be comfortable.
Emily Rioux of Oser en Solo and Danse par cas par cas.
And we tried it. It was a whole new thing last year and it worked so well that we decided to go for another round this year.
And Léa Philippe of Street Theatre Festival FAR.
Make discover artists like puppet artists or clowns and dancers and people that don't necessarily known by a large public. So it's a very, very amazing opportunity. We're really lucky and grateful.
Back in fall 2020, the Centaur Theatre in downtown Montreal launched a discussion to decide how to better attract diverse candidates to the space. The theatre applied for new granting from the Conseil des Arts de Montréal to prioritize Indigenous voices. And so, at the start of 2021, the Centaur put out an appeal for a new position, the theater's first Indigenous artist residency. Artistic and executive director Ida Holmes acknowledged that, quote, Indigenous stories are a key part of Chauchage and Montreal's heritage, and yet their stories have been missing throughout Centaur's half-century history. A few months later, the chosen candidate was revealed, and it is Ange Loft, an interdisciplinary performance artist and theater initiator from nearby Ganawage, who got her start in that community's community theater as a youngster, and who has since worked in Toronto, elsewhere in Canada, and in the US as well. She has been directing Indigenous-oriented theater projects for over two decades, with a special focus on history. And notably, she teaches story creation for the Center for Indigenous Theater in Toronto, the only post-secondary conservatory of its kind in the country. One of the criteria for the candidates for this position was someone plugged into the local Indigenous artistic community, and Ange fits the bill. And her ambitions are not just to create art, but to dig deep into the Centaur's footprint in Old Montreal, the space also known as Chauchage, as you've probably heard in land acknowledgments at theater performances and other public events over the past few years. Centaur is located just steps from where a bedrock colonial accord was first signed with various First Nations back in the 1700s. When I spoke with Ange last week, I met someone who is not just thinking of the stage, but looking to explore the past, literally and figuratively, through archives and records, to visiting them into the dark basement of the theater space itself. She has done research in her hometown of Ganawage, the Smithsonian National Museum of the American Indian in the States, and the Royal Ontario Museum. And as Ange puts it, quote, by exposing the complex relationships between Indigenous nations and colonial powers, we remind Canada and Quebec of past agreements made in trust, expose the upheaval caused by imposed ideologies and social practices, and most importantly, celebrate the resilience, resistance, and resurgence of Indigenous thought. Ange brings with her the Talking Treaties Chauchage Collective, a trio of three Ganyakahaga women with ties to Ganawage. They are Barbara Gan-Era Dun-E-Daibo and Yahande Foote. Barbara is a dancer and choreographer who fuses traditional First Nations dance with contemporary moves. And Yahande is an actor, stage manager, costume designer, and production assistant who has worked in theater, TV, and film for over 16 years. I'm very eager to see what this trio produces. Their year-long work starts this month. I met with Ange last week, taking a break from work in one of the Centaur's empty theater seats. Here is our conversation. Welcome, Ange, to Upstage. It's a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for taking the time.
No problemo. Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Congratulations on your appointment to Centaur Theater. It feels like a momentous piece of news and a momentous appointment. What was your reaction when you found out that you were getting this position?
Well, it came at a time period where I was actually trying to pull some beans together and make my way back to Ganawage in Montreal anyway. I had a bit of a family loss and I was thinking, you know what, I need to make a project that would bring me closer to home, that'll give me excuses to return back to my family's home and be around town a little bit more. So yeah, kind of an excitement that I'd get to come home and work in Montreal with such a good amount of support. Yeah.
Well, I'm really sorry to hear about your loss for your family and for you. When you say being out of Ganawage, Montreal area, you were in Toronto, right? You've been working at the Centre for Indigenous Theatre, is that correct?
Yeah, I work at the Centre for Indigenous Theatre. I started there only a year ago, actually, teaching story creation, but I've been in Toronto for about since 2008. So I work with a company there called Jumbly's Theatre, and we do predominantly community art. So I've been kicking around for a few years, I guess, in the community arts world as associate artistic director there.
And tell me about, I'm curious about the center. This is a unique place in regards to how the work is done, right? In terms of training and the art that comes out of it.
The Center for Indigenous Theater is pretty rad. You know, we try to hire quite a few Indigenous instructors, and I'm actually having the opportunity coming up to work with, get all of the students and bring them to a nice place on the Credit River and make a whole new production there that's actually about the dish with one spoon. So it's been really good to kind of have their trust and really, you know, get to know the students that way.
Well, I do want to talk about dish with one spoon in a moment, but I'm also curious about how you as a student came up and how you got your start in theater. Did you first kind of cross the boards at Turtle Island Theater Company in Ganawage?
Sure did. Yeah, Turtle Island Theater Company was, I guess, my stomping ground. There's a really wonderful man who was there named Kevin Saylor, and he brought really inspired a lot of this starting up over there. We spent a lot of our formative years doing musicals and making props from whatever was donated and this kind of scrappy-doo way of making, but it's carried forward, you know. But from there, I took a little while. I thought I was going to be an anthropologist or an archaeologist or a sociologist and ended up diving right back into theater. I went to Concordia, did my major at Concordia, and then realized at that point I didn't know how to make my own work, right? Still, you know, so I had to go to Center for Indigenous Theater and do some mentorship under some of their professors. So took off, ran away to Toronto, and you know, got a chance to train under some really great people there.
That's so interesting that you had thought that your path might be as a scientist of some sort. Do you still consider like anything that you might have picked up in anthropology or in sociology is being part of how you interrogate or teach or learn?
Oh, I was trying to explain what my next career thing would be. And I said, you know what? I want to be an archaeology artist. And I was like, what is that exactly? I'm just making up a job for myself, which more or less means that by the time I'm 50, I would love to be able to walk into an archive in any place within Ganyakahaga territory and be comfortable and know how to operate their systems and how to get in and out of all of their cherry pickers and look in the drawers. That's my favorite kind of thing to do, is actually spending some time inside some archives, places that get to dig around. And yeah, I love those kind of connections. Some of my favorite things involve things that are buried under the ground. So.
Putting it out there, is there anything that you might be able to share as being a favorite thing that you've discovered in a drawer or under the ground at this point in your career?
Well, there's a really large story. I'm still really, really interested in these things called bird stones. Mm-hmm. So that's another level. But Yeah, I had the chance one time, quite a few years ago, talking about The Dish with One Spoon, to go speak with some people at the ROM. I just booked an appointment, and I was so intrigued by this idea of, you know, just some shelves hidden away that have a whole bunch of little pieces of flint and pottery fragments and, you know, the things that aren't really put together enough to put out to display, but tell a really serious story. But yeah, that's been my subtle obsession for the past couple years in Toronto, is trying to piece together this sort of underground narrative for the settlement patterns and different processes that would have seen lots of populations come and go over a landscape.
So you just said the ROM, that's the Royal Ontario Museum, I believe. So getting there, you kind of got a chance to kind of go behind the scenes and to discover these stones. And that's something that's kind of something you're hoping to discover in other places as well.
Yeah. As part of this work, I'm trying to connect up with quite a few people. You know, there's a lot of hidden history and a lot of people in Montreal that you just have to find the right people to speak to, really. You know, today we were talking, I had an interview today. I asked on purpose to talk to Chuck here, the general manager at the Centaur, just get his take on the building and his relationship to, he has a ton of information. So I like to do that. Find one of the people, some of the most senior people in the room, and ask them questions, you know? So that's one of my processes. So I'm hoping to connect up with Pointe-au-Calier, connect up with a couple different organizations, and maybe even make my way into that secret Sulpician garden that's right behind the Centaur.
Oh, a secret garden behind that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's a completely hidden garden. So we have a lot of interesting kind of connections between this area of the old Montreal and my own community. So I'm drawing some of those lines and trying to figure out some of those stories that we have, I guess, in our oral history, that kind of make the connections financially, actually, to the creation of the large church that's next to us.
Oh, and this Notre Dame Basilica.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot of oral history around that place.
Yeah. I'm speaking with Ange Loft. She is the first ever Indigenous artist in residence at Centaur Theatre, embarking on her year-long residency this month. I know that they were searching high and low for submissions for this particular position. And so did you talk about the history and what you were hoping to do? That's what I'm almost imagining is almost like an archaeological dig, metaphorically speaking, of the space and all the history in old Montreal. Was that like really what you pushed forward when you were making your application?
Well, I was trying to think of, this ask that they put out there, you know, let's talk about some of the hidden histories, some of the things that aren't brought up too often when we talk about Indigenous presence in the city. And I had previously just done a residency with Studio 303, exploring kind of like a lot of these things with a whole new team of artists and some guests. And that was actually where I brought in my collaborator, Barbara. Mm-hmm. So it was just we applied and started thinking about a few things that were already on my plate. You know, I've been researching for years this agreement about the Dish with One Spoon that kind of brings us to this area around the 1701 time period. Definitely a conversation that involves Kahnawake. There's definitely a conversation that involves a lot of the nations that span across this between more or less right here all the way to Sault Ste. Marie. So long, huge, huge agreement that would have been essentially forged in and around this area. So I pitched a little bit of a deep dive into the Great Peace of Montreal, which is a kind of really large endeavor that the French put together to help bring some, it's a very complicated story, but let's say a lot of Indigenous nations decided to put their fighting down and come to some understanding. So that was one of the stories that I was intrigued by because it's so connected to Montreal, to Tsotsiaake. And another one that I was really interested in was a belt, actually a wampum belt, that's called the Two-Dog Wampum Belt. And it's related to the people of Gunasadage, And it's regarding, I guess, essentially their exodus from the island that was in relationship to the religious folks that would have been around that area at the time. So they'd been expelled from the island and made to go live around the Lake of Two Mountains area. So it was about 1721, but there's a wampum belt that goes along with it that is super intriguing to me. So yeah, that was one of the main visuals I had. I love working in this kind of large scale way. So I really think like image first. And so mm-hmm. that was one of the images that really popped up, just this visual of moving this belt across the stage and across in and around some places. So that was the main pitch, more or less. But the addition to that was thinking about some of those questions around unceded territory. How do we get to that conversation? And then who should I talk to in Gunawage that could help me inform, get some information out of them? So I've started that process now. The who should we talk to? Who are the people that have this information, right?
And it's not just history in the last 50 years. We're stretching back hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Makes it kind of tricky to imagine.
I have a personal preference for this time period between the 1650s and the early 1700s. I just have a really, really, really deep interest in the old, the earliest records of what could have been in and around this area. I've spent a lot of time with the Jesuit archives and just kind of trying to piece together what life and, making these agreements would have looked like for, this area quite a long time ago. Things really shift politically after. So yeah. I don't like the gnarly period of Indigenous history. I kind of like the period where there's still some negotiations, some, right. Some conversations based on Indigenous protocols and practices. I like kind of imagining a different world from that perspective.
I'm speaking with Ange Loft, who is the first Indigenous artist in residence at Centaur Theatre, and we're talking about some of the work that she's already started as her residency begins this month. Ange, you've been referencing Dish with One Spoon. It's this kind of this concept about sharing that has really deep roots. Can you explain to me some of that and how it pertains to your work?
Well, it's kind of funny thinking about making, even thinking about making costumes and things with donations. I could draw back to the Dish with One Spoon, thinking about my own approaches to
your early days.
Yeah, not wanting to overconsume the different kind of personal choices you make that have to refer to some of the tenets, I guess, of this agreement, right? So it's an agreement that's Indigenous nation to nation agreement that kind of, there's a lot of origin stories for where it comes from, but one of them is connected to the great law, the Kayanarakoa, the creation of that, in a moment where they had all 50 chiefs sitting in a circle and the peacemaker went and passed around a big dish of beaver tail stew and people were told to essentially take what you need and make sure that that dish makes it around the whole circle. So conceptually embodied kind of learning practice to really kind of nail it home that we all have to share what is in the environment. We have to share, be respectful, keep it clean, make sure there's enough for the future, make sure that there's that we all get what we need to sustain our livelihoods and our lives, but at the same time be super cognizant of our capacity to overconsume. So I've been thinking a lot about that agreement and, it doesn't necessarily involve a lot of non-Indigenous people, but we talk about it sometimes, particularly in Toronto these days. They mention we're on Dish with One Spoon territory, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know how much they do that in Montreal, but very often we talk about it like it's this beautiful, simple sharing agreement. But yeah, the dance project I'm working on currently, a lot, parallel. I have multiple projects running right now. I had a rehearsal this morning for a project I have called Dish Dances that I'm doing in Toronto, actually in Brampton. But it's like talking about the kind of dark aspects of it, the capacity we have for we've laid down some rules, but essentially people are always going to break them. So we have to make sure we keep coming back to council and negotiating these things between ourselves. I'm talking about nation to nation, Indigenous nations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty long story, and it's a really big concept, but it actually has its heart in Xochitl, in and around this area and with the Haudenosaunee people. And yeah, it was extended way out. Keep having it pop up in conversation over and over again as we move along history timeline. Yeah.
One of the things that Ida Holmes, the artistic director and executive director at Centaur, mentioned in your selection was that you have curiosity, imagination, and passion. I'm hearing so much of that just listening to you talk about some of your work and the paths that you hope to go down. And I'm super interested to see how things are going to, what's going to come out of this residency. So I guess maybe just, you've got a lot of research ahead of you. I know that that's a really big part of your work. What can we expect as audience members? Do you think this is going to come out as a theatrical piece at some point this season or next season? What are your hopes for what audiences will see?
Well, we're looking at this year, taking our time with myself, Yohande, and Barbara. Just taking our time this year to do our research, to pull together essentially a draft for next summer, for August. We're finishing our residency in August next year. So by that point, I'm hoping to have a nice draft of what we're imagining. Barbara is a movement artist. So she's going to spend some time in here in December in our next kind of big push altogether that we get a chance to work in. And Barbara's going to get a chance to do some physical explorations of some of our ideas. And then I work in really, as I mentioned, really large scale imagery, kind of in this world of puppetry. I tend to work, I guess, you know, community centered work. So it's going to be a fine line, you know, trying to balance the stories that we bring out, the stories that I think are the most pertinent and the stories that I would really like to kind of put back on the table here, right? So there's a lot of, but also, I mean, my own interest just in the things that are underground in this area, in the Old Port area. I love this idea that a lot of the places where cities, you know, where the downtown cores of cities tended to be built right on top of archaeological, you know, old villages and previous sites, you know, a lot of the times the people that would come to settle upon Indigenous territory just chose the places that were the most convenient to plop down their towns. So what was here in this area before, you know, there's really exciting things. We took a tour yesterday of the Centaur and got a chance to go in the basement and into the pit and into some really exciting places and spaces around this area. And I started thinking about tunnels and digging and connections to the Sulpicians and connections to Ganawage and to the various buildings and structures that are intimately connected to our own families, you know, our own communities. The people in our communities built a lot of the architecture that we identify with as Montreal things, mm-hmm. you know, thinking about the cross on Mount Royal. There's so many places I like to say, you know, my father says like, yeah, my grandfather built that, you know? So we have that kind of coming up quite a bit.
It sounds like it's also personal, right?
It's very personal. When we talk about the large church next to us, there's, you know, it connects up to some of the current issues we have in Ganawage. Yes. We have connections to land claim issues that some people say that whole basilica was built upon some of the rents that would have come from people renting out from the Jesuits or Sulpicians renting out portions of our land to farmers, you know? So there's old people that say, hey, that basilica is ours, actually. That was supposed to be, you know, the money had been siphoned into creating that big church. So it's just like, it's very personal when you get down to it and ownership of buildings, where people feel like they actually belong and where they see their own labor building up a place.
And I'm unbelievably excited and so much looking forward to what comes of this residency. I'm a history buff myself, and hearing you talk about all of these different elements and going into the pit of Centaur and visiting Puente Caliere, I think there's going to be some really exciting things to come. I mean, you know this. I'm just going to say it for myself. So thank you so much for taking the time. I'm really eager to see what comes out of your work with Yahande and Ganera Duni. Thank you for your time.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for getting in touch.
That was my conversation with Ange Loft, the Centaur Theater's first ever Indigenous artist in residence. She undertakes her work starting this month with two other artists, Barbara Ganera Duni Daibo and Yahande Foot, together known as the Talking Treaties Chochagi Collective. You can find out more about their work at centaurtheater.com. I'm very excited to see where Ange's work leads the collective. And not only is she a theater maker slash historian slash initiator and facilitator and teacher, Ange is a vocalist with Yamantaka Sonic Titan, a Juno and Polaris nominated band with Montreal and Indigenous roots. This is their single, One, off of their second album, Uzu. It begins with a traditional Iroquois song, a social song performed by the Ganiagahaga people that welcomes and brings people together. In the meantime, the Centaur launches its new season on Wednesday, August 25th at centaurtheater.com if you want to see what they have cooking for this upcoming season. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, a look at Montreal's volunteer-powered, massive street theater festival coming to a corner near you. Ose en Solo is a pandemic creation. It works very well for our times. One dancer performing for just one or two audience members. And to throw in a soupçon of spontaneity, the show is brief and it takes place in a surprise outdoor location. The Short Festival is back in Montreal and several other Quebec cities and towns starting this week. In Montreal, you buy a ticket for a particular neighborhood. This includes Little Italy, the Plateau, Rosemount, Ahuntsic, Villeray, and the Southwest Borough. You're told your location 24 hours in advance. You show up, you get a pair of headphones, you hear the music, and you see the performance. Several acclaimed choreographers have been paired with musicians to create these new works, and a neat angle is that some of the composers, though acclaimed and professional and successful, they've actually never written for dance before. I spoke last week with Emily Rioux. She handles communications for Danse Cas par Cas, founded by choreographer Karine Ledoyen, who created the concept for Osé several years ago. This edition of Osé en Solo for pandemic times is being co-presented with the Agora de la Danse. Here is Emily Ryu.
Welcome to Upstage, Emily. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
So Osé en Solo, Nasca Parca, tell me about how Karine's company has partnered with the Agora on this presentation.
Well, it's been 2 years now. We did this collaboration last year. It's a totally new concept where people get to see dancers one-on-one in a outside place in Montreal, different places in Montreal, places that are hidden somehow. So it's like a place that is kept secret until the last minute. And then people, they receive an email saying, okay, meet me at this place, this time, and they discover then what is the artist that's gonna, you know, dance for them. And we tried it. It was a whole new thing last year, and it worked so well that we decided to go for another round this year with L'Agora. So we're co-presenters of the project. So L'Agora is there to support us, to, you know, help us choose the dancers, to help us choose all the little places that the solo takes place there. So yeah, it's a really, really cool team that we have with Danska Parka and L'Agora.
And the logistics must be just wild. How, figuring out, you know, like it's hard enough to set up a dance regular show in one venue and have people come in, but you're setting yourself up in different neighborhoods. I wanted to ask about how you decide which artist gets to go to which neighborhood.
Well, it's really important that the artist is comfortable with the neighborhood, with the place. So L'Agora de la Danse, they know the city. They know their favorite mm-hmm. places. They, you know, they just walk around and they choose a spot or two where it could, you know, take place. Because yes, it has to be like somewhere in the city, but we cannot be like downtown in the middle of everything with all the sound. And, you know, we have to pick a place and choose a place that is a bit quiet, you know, that can create kind of a bubble. And then the artist has to agree with it and say, yeah, I'd like to dance there. It inspires me because it's really important. It's like, it's their stage. So the artist and the L'Agora de la Danse, they're like together, they team up to choose where they're going to play, where they're going to dance. It works really well. There are some places that were there last year that will come back this year. So for the people who went to see the show last year, maybe that you can spot yourself the place where you saw a solo. And there's a whole new series of shows also. So new places, new spots. And it's always kind of a test. You know, you never know until you do it. So
can you give me an idea maybe of one or two places without giving them away, but just so we can imagine, you know, like what is it, like in a cafe? Is there one on a park? Like how creative is this?
It's always outside. So it's really important. You know, it's basically, you know, because of the pandemic and stuff. So we had to be outside. There are a lot of places that are in little parks. You have a lot of places too that are, you know, in the back of some restaurants, in the back of, you know, it's always a public place where, you know, anyone could go and you can wander in the city and, you know, wow, there's a show there. What's going on? Mm-hmm. But you have to have a ticket to hear the music, because what's important there is that you have the music inside your headphones. So you cannot hear the music unless you buy a ticket and then you go there and then we give you the headphones and then you can, you know, enjoy all the experience. So if you wander around Montreal, let's say in the Houndstick or let's say in Villeray or Rosemont, you might, you know, come across, you know, a dancer somewhere and you're like, what's going on? Well, go to the website and buy your tickets so you know what's going on exactly. So it's really like Rosemont, Villeray, Mont-Royal, Petite Italie also, Centre-Sud and Houndstick. These are the places, the neighborhoods where you can find the solos this year.
I'm glad you just brought up the music and how, you know, only people with the tickets will be actually be able to get the music and get the full experience. Each solo actually has a different artist creating the soundscape, right? This is so fascinating. Like, how do you explain how the dance is going to unfold in a public space? Like, I'm just wondering how that informs what a composer does.
It's all, you know, made up together at the same time. So you have the dancer, and they're not always in the same city. Sometimes they have to create all of this apart. So we have musicians that are from Montreal, from Quebec City, from all parts of Quebec, that they worked home, basically, and they send stuff to the dancer. And then the dancer says, oh, yeah, I like this. So they film themselves sometimes, and they send part of a choreography to the dancer, so he could to the musician, so he could, you know, keep on creating. So it's always the back and forth creation, you know, from a distance. So that's really amazing. Like, I admire all the artists that work for us like that. It's really impressive what they can do that way. And sometimes, you know, it happens that the musician and the composer and the dancer all in the same city, and then they can work more closely, let's say. But basically, I really, really admire everyone that, you know, they managed to create that in like 10 hours, 20 hours.
Wow. I'm speaking with Emily Rioux, who is in charge of communications for Danse Cas par Cas, which is presenting Osé en Solo. And the other thing too, which is so interesting, is that you see the show by yourself as an audience member, right? Or is it one to two people per presentation?
Yeah, it's one or two people per presentation. What you can do also is, like, you buy, you know, I don't know, a ticket for Villeric, and then you like it a lot and you say, oh, I want to go see another one. Well, you could buy different tickets, you know, and, you know, make yourself your own perfect night and, you know, travel around the city. So what I really like to do when I go see the shows, and I will definitely in Montreal, is explore places where I never went, or like, yeah, I know this neighborhood, but like, and you arrive at the place where you have your rendezvous, and and you're like, oh my God, what is this place? I never, you know, you're like a tourist in your own city. That's what I like about it.
Can you tell me about one neighborhood that you went to last year that you had never kind of set foot in before, where you took in a show?
Well, I went to Quebec City also, because, you know, I currently live in Quebec City. So I went to see a lot of show there. I went to see a solo in a park in Mont-Royal. I don't remember the name though, but I cannot tell you anyway. So, yeah. But you know, it's really often like, oh, I never thought of seeing a show here. I never thought of seeing art here, you know, in a little park, in a backyard, and you know, and sometimes it's places that we don't even have access to. It's like, okay, normally I cannot go there, but this time, because of the whole concept, I can go there. I'm allowed to cross that fence and then go there. So it's kind of a, you know, it's a little punk.
What kind of challenges come up with having to set up a show like this for one person at a time in a public space? Like, do you have to get like a permit from the city, or deal with any, like, get permission to be in certain spaces?
Yeah, we do. Absolutely. Sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's harder to get the permission, but we always have to ask for the permission to be there. And then we have to deal with, you know, the outside world.
Great.
You never know what's going to happen. You never know when, you know, some car with loud music is going to, you know, just come by in the street. You never know if it's going to rain. As simple as that. You never know. You know, there's a lot of things that we cannot plan ahead.
Yeah. So what happens if there's a loud car, or, you know, a thunderstorm or something like that? Does something get, can you like postpone for a couple of minutes? Like, I imagine that's kind of easy because it's one performer and one person viewing them.
But we have to, you know, get the message across to 35 person in the province of Quebec. That's the whole thing there. So we have to, yes, it's one-on-one. Yes, it's one person watching and one person performing. But you know, times 35. So that's what's hard, basically. And, you know, the name of the company is Cas par Cas. So in French, that, you know, it has a lot of sense to it. So we have to take it one at a time and say, okay, let's say it rains. It's the dancer that decides if he wants to dance anyway or not. Mm. So we don't cancel. We have umbrellas. So if you go to a show and then it might rain, you know, it's really warm. Maybe it's going to rain. Maybe we're going to have a thunderstorm. Well, we can provide a shelter for you, but it's the dancer that's going to decide. If it's really impossible for us to, you know, play the show, then yeah, we're going to work that out. But, you know, even if there's, I don't know, you know, the outside world is happening, but if you have a good, you know, pair of headphones, we try to create that moment. It's only 10 minutes. So the solo is from 10 to 15 minutes. So, you know, we just hope that nothing bad is going to happen during those little 10, 15 minutes. And then what is really cool is that you get to talk to the artist.
Yeah.
So we do have a 5 minutes after that when you can just take off the headphones and talk to the artist and ask questions and just share your experience, because, you know, it's really intense. You share a moment one-on-one with an artist that looks at you sometimes in the eye during the performance. So it can be really, like, I don't know. I was really, I was shook. I don't know. It's a disturbing experience for some people, but it's really different and original. And that's what I like about it. It's nothing can be planned ahead. It's just a surprise all the time. It's 100% surprise.
Speaking with Emily Rioux of Danse Cas par Cas, what's really striking me too is that it's one-on-one. It's short, as you were saying, about 10 minutes, and then you can have a time to speak afterwards with the artist. But at the same time, it requires so much logistical work to span out into 16 cities in the province and to do this one-on-one. Like, there's so much work that goes into doing these very small things.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I really thank you for bringing that up, because we are currently working on that. Because, yeah, there's the part of the creation, you know, where we have to, you know, pick the artist, pick the places, and then put them together so they can create. And then there's always people that are there to welcome, you know, the audience. So we have to pick people. Like in Montreal, there are 10 solos. So we have to have 10 persons that are going to be there to welcome, you know, the audience, and to speak with them, to explain to them what's going to happen. So that is part also of the project, you know, to pick the right persons. And we have, you know, technical issues. So we have to have, like, the music in the ears of the dancers and in the ears of the audience with the headphones. Mm. So we have to work that out too. So the track is, you know, simultaneous. So we press play on both things. On both cell phones, play on the music at the same time. So it's synchronized. So that's I like it a lot, because, like I said, a lot of things could go wrong, but we just cross our fingers and we work hard, so it works in every part of Quebec, in every cities, in every corner, and that everyone has a really unique experience, no matter the city where they go to see the shows.
So these are nearly 40 dance solos. That means almost over 65 artists, because we count the dancers, the choreographers, and the musicians. Mm-hmm. And this is happening in 16 towns for one-on-ones. But how many people are behind the scenes then?
Roughly? Oh my God. Well, you have the venues that are really important. So in every city, you have a different venue that is working with us to sell the tickets, basically. So they're there to provide a website, so people from Joliette, from Terrebonne, from Repentigny can buy the tickets. So it's 10 venues total across Quebec, and each has, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 persons working there. And then you have to count the Danse Cas par Cas team. We're like 5, 6, 7 persons. So yeah, you know, do the maths.
Yeah. people. It's just about like over 100, almost 200 people, I guess, in total when we include the artists. It's absolutely fascinating.
It's a lot. And I'd like to say that it's one of the biggest dance events that I've seen in my life. And I think it's the biggest dance project that ever had, you know, ever happened in the province of Quebec. It's a really huge and important moment that we're living right now. Well, starting on the 17th.
And really quickly, what are the other towns who are taking part aside of Montreal? You mentioned Repentigny.
Yeah, there's in the Laurentides, you have Saint-Jérôme, Sainte-Agathe-des-Monts, really up north. You have Joliette-Repentigny, you have Terrebonne, Quebec City, of course. And then you could also go to the, give me a minute, I have to check that out, because there's a lot of cities. Blainville, Sainte-Thérèse, Rosemère also, Valmorin, and you can also go to L'Assomption. So these are basically the cities where you can go and see a solo in a very special place that is specially picked for Osée en solo. And then you can discover the arts of both the dancer, choreographer, and the musician that is behind all this, which will play in your ears, in your headphones.
Emily, thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about this wonderful project, Osée en solo Montréal.
Thanks to you, Sarah.
That was Emily Rioux, who handles communications for Danse Cas par Cas, which is putting on Osée en solo with the Agora de la Danse. The one-on-one dance festival has just kicked off this week. It runs until August 28th. And as Emily mentioned, it's taking place in other cities as well, if you'd like to check that out outside of Montreal. For tickets and information, visit agoradance.com, agoradance.com. So that's Dance with an S, not a C. Or you can call 514-525-1500. Remember, you book a neighborhood and then you find out your location 24 hours in advance and you show up. It's just one or two audience members per performance, but it's very brief. I'm Sarah De A, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. The Festival des Arts du Roel has just kicked off its fifth edition with over 215 professional artists from across different disciplines taking to the streets of the city from here until September 12th. Currently, the shows are happening cinq à sept style for 14 days over the course of the month with a three-day extravaganza of pop-up shows to close it. And what's more, you don't have to be standing on a street corner to see the acrobats and musicians and stilt walkers work their magic. The performances are on social media at hashtag FAR5, F-A-R and the number 5, as well as on MaTV, the public TV channel, for the first time this year. I spoke with Léa Philippe, the directrice générale of FAR, as she was on scene for one of the launch events last week.
How's it going so far?
Very exciting to have 17 days, but it's such a marathon.
Absolutely.
People excited, I think, especially in COVID season. Can we say COVID season? I don't know, COVID period, COVID.
I think you can say however you want it to be, right? It's up to your individual creativity. I like COVID season. I think that sounds good.
COVID season? Okay, I hope there won't be any COVID season anymore. So it's very intense to organize a festival in COVID. Rules change every day.
Yes.
And we have 215 artists to inform. That's what are the new rules every day. What are the new plans? Oh, you know what? Finally, we're not doing this, we're doing that. Okay, go! So we're talking now in a really big, intense marathon because tonight, the day we record, it's the second day and artists are getting prepared right in front of me right now. So it's very exciting and fun, though. It's fun, but it's
I wanted to ask before we get into the programming for the fifth edition, the current one, this having happened last year as well in a COVID situation, was there important lessons that you learned last time that's making it a bit easier to put this on this year?
Because of COVID, we reinvented ourselves, everyone, I guess, especially artists. So we've had ideas like doing parades, pop-up shows, surprise shows, and to film all the festival last year and put it online. So this year we do it again, but we improve it. So it's still 17 days. Mm-hmm. it's all on TV this year, on MaTV, and not only on Facebook. So a step higher in quality, I guess, of video. So we're now video producer, which is totally new for us. And we improved so many parades. We added the Mixed Bus Studio in our program last year. We discovered this company, and now they're back 10 days with us. So the COVID forced us to reach out of our traditional alleys. So we met different people, and we switched from 3 days to 17 last year because there was nothing. So we said, like, hey, we're going to do 17 days. So this year we do 17 days again to offer more opportunities to celebrate in those weird times.
And I imagine that part of it is also that the demand was there, that you had audiences growing and growing, and that's why you chose to increase the number of days by so much.
Yeah. We met people, we discovered new artists. Because there was nothing last year, mm-hmm. people were curious about us, so it grew a lot. So this year we meet still more people, and then grows. It grows at a very intense rhythm. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of trying to reach us, like the organizer of the festival. We try to reach the croissant.
Absolutely. Wonderful to see the festival growing by leaps and bounds. I'm speaking with Léa Philippe, who is the director general of the Festival Phare. Let's. I wanted to ask about the Videotron MaTV Diffusion. How did the collaboration with MaTV and Videotron come to be?
MaTV collaboration is awesome. They give us a beautiful opportunity to improve our video quality and reach more people and to make discover artists like puppet artists or clowns and dancers and people that don't necessarily known by a large public. So it's a very, very amazing opportunity. We're really lucky and grateful.
Léa, tell me about some of the acts that we can see. You just hinted at some of the variety of performances that will be on the program this year. Maybe you can talk about some of the things that you were looking forward to seeing.
So there are going to be theater, dance, clown, puppet, music for sure, like Clay and Friends. I think it's really nice to have this like known band on the top of the Mixed Bus moving. And like there's a moving show, like a rolling show. And in between that, there are stilt walkers, sucklers, and all the disciplines are there.
How do you keep everything organized for yourself with over like 200 artists and all these different pop-ups happening all over the place? You must have an enormous spreadsheet somewhere that's got everything organized.
I have a wonderful team, and the Phare is organized by about 15 volunteers. So it's a bit crazy because we all have day jobs that are not necessarily organizing a festival. But we're really a team tissé serré, which means like we're a really close team, I think. Bring our qualities together, and it works so well because I'm so lucky to have those people. They're incredible.
That's absolutely wonderful to hear. That's amazing. Yeah. Is there one particular show that you are excited to see this year?
But I like all the parades. It's great that it's because they're a surprise, and we're going in the alleys, and there are 10 artists from all the disciplines, and fanfare, and fields, and jugglers, and clowns. And we're seeing people from their balcony who are surprised, who are enjoying and so happy. It's amazing. The energy is amazing.
Léa, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about the 5th edition of the Phare. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
That was Léa Philippe, Directrice Générale of Street Theater Festival Phare, a celebration of art that happens in alleyways and on street corners. Follow them online at festivalphare.com to find out about the 5 cassette performances this month, as well as the 3 days of pop-up shows that will close it out on September 12th. You can also check out programming on their social channels and, for the first time ever, on MaTV. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard Ange Loft, the Centaur Theater's first ever Indigenous artist in residence, Emily Hu of Osez en Solo and Danse Cas par Cas, and Leah Philippe of Street Theater Festival FAR. A very big thank you to my guests, and thank you for tuning in. To close out tonight's show, I want to take you to the Orchard Theatre in Dartford, England. They are hard at work on their upcoming performance of the Rocky Horror Show, which will mark the reopening of the theatre later this month. Now, dressing up is key for Rocky Horror performances, not just for the cast and band, but sometimes the audience too. When the theatre sought to purchase wigs like those worn by the character of Dr. Frankenfurter, the protagonist slash villain slash evil scientist alien first brought to life by Tim Curry, they ended up ordering Frankenfurters, as in hot dogs.
So, as you would have seen from our last video, we appear to have been sent cans of Frankfurters instead of Frankenfurter wigs. Kay, can you update us with what happened?
Well, I've been on the phone with the supplier this morning, and they're the same supplier that we get our party food and our party supplies from. And I think, I don't know if there might have been a typo or some miscommunication, but instead of Frankenfurter wigs, we've got Frankfurters.
Okay, so what are we going to do with them?
52? Yeah, which is a lot of sausage.
It's a lot of...
I don't know what to do with it.
Okay. Watch this space, I guess.
52 cans of hot dogs showed up at the Orchard Theatre, not wigs. The supplier not only ships wigs, but they also send out party food items too, sort of accounting for the mix-up. Dr. Frankenfurter, hot dogs. Yeah, anyone could make that mistake. The theater will be donating the cans to local food banks. No word on whether they're still planning to get those wigs. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under archives. Thank you to Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and ckut.ca. Stay safe and talk soon.
Jump to the left.
And then a step to the right.
With your hands on your hips.
You're bringing me so tight. Where is the velvet dust? It really drives me insane. Let's do the time on the air. Let's do the time on the air.
It's a dream. You can't see me. No, not at all. In another dimension, with voyeuristic intention. Well secluded, I see all.
With a bit of a mind flip,
you're into the time slip.
And nothing can ever be the same.
You're spaced out on sensation.
Like you're under.
It takes a good dose of courage and perseverance to get through a pandemic.
True, but it also takes a good dose of patience, resilience, confidence, optimism, humor, and love. Not to mention a dose of determination, endurance, empathy, motivation, hope, and ingenuity.
But above all, it takes a second dose of vaccine.
A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Shalom Aleichem on August 29th at 2 p.m. Live music returns to Montreal as the Klez Canada Festival moves to Marché de Persib à l'Entrepôt 77, 77 Bernard East. The lineup includes Briga and her Balkan Turbo Folk, Yiddish songs with So-Called and Warhol Dervish, Romani and Sephardic music with Taraf Siriana. It's all part of a week-long hybrid festival that starts on August 23rd online with concerts and workshops, where you can learn klezmer trumpet from Frank London, klezmer fiddle from Alicia Spiegels, and so much more. To register, go to klezcanada.org and join us for a CKUT Pop Montreal co-production at Marché de Persib à l'Entrepôt 77, 77 Bernard East on August 29th. Mevelen Zachsein dort. We'll see you there soon.
Welcome to the Thursday, August 19th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we'll be listening to a lecture entitled The Financialization of Housing. It's presented by Leilani Farha, a special rapporteur on the right to adequate housing appointed by the United Nations Human Rights Council. She was the executive director of Canada Without Poverty, an NGO based in Ottawa, and she's a human rights lawyer by training. She's worked all over the world on the implementation of economic and social rights. So without further ado, here's tonight's lecture on Grey Matters, delivered by Leilani Farha. Good listening.
I think it's important to note that the decision of governments to support housing as a commodity or as an investment, and the complementary decisions to withdraw conceptually and in practice from housing as a social good, cannot be regarded as just, oh, any old policy decision. Housing is not gold. Gold is a commodity. Housing is not. It's a human right. Unfortunately, housing as a place of warmth, of security, and love, of shared stories and memories, is losing its currency.
That's Leilani Farha, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Leilani Farha on the financialization of housing. From Seattle to Toronto, the cost of owning a home is soaring. Rents are no better, accelerated by neoliberal economic doctrine. A paradigm shift in housing has occurred.